Good morning. Bueno. Welcome everyone here this morning. It's a privilege to be back home again and for a Sunday. And for some reason it feels like the last few weeks have been a little bit hectic going and being at different places, but it's good to be back with you all again. Here at the end of this year, or we're here at the end of the year, and we all know what New Year's resolutions are like, probably. Well, I say all of us. Some people know what they're like more than others. And we like to look back and reflect on the year behind us and see what we accomplished. So what did you do right last year? If you look back and think back there, what did you do right? We all did things, some things right. We did some things wrong. Are we satisfied with how we lived our lives this last year? Or would we like to make some changes? If we look back and see how life unfolded, are there things that we would like to change about our life? And if you're like me, there's going to be things in back there that you would like to change. There's mistakes that I've made that I'd like to do better at this year. There's some things that we did right that I'm really glad we did. And I'd like to do it again. There's a verse, just a text verse here. You don't have to turn to it. In Proverbs 4:26, it says, "Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established." And that's the title I'd like to use this morning, is "Ponder the path of thy feet." This morning I'd like for us to do that, is to ponder the path that we're on. And I think we all have goals for where we'd like to be in the future. We have goals for 5 years maybe. Maybe we don't write them down, but we kind of have goals where we'd like to be in 5 years, or 10 years, or 30 years. We all have a goal, hopefully, of where we'd like our destination to be in 150 years. And that would be in eternity. We do well to step back and sight along the path that we're walking, to see if the course that we're on is leading to the place where we want to go. When we take a trip to New York City, we don't typically route that trip through San Diego. If we did, we'd want to have a really good reason why we'd want to go to New York City through San Diego. Because they're at opposite ends of the country. And it would take a lot longer to get there. It's not even on the same path. You'd have to alter course in order to get there. You'd have to change the direction that you go. And as I step back and reflect on where I'm going, we're all traveling through life in a direction. But is it the direction that we want to go? And for some of us, it is. Yeah, we're right. We're doing what we're on the path, and we make mistakes and we fall down, but we are going in the right direction. And maybe there's some of us that are going in the wrong direction, and we need to turn around and change course to go in the right direction. But this morning, I'd like to draw our minds to reflect on what direction, if we put one foot in front of the other one, is it going in the right direction? Turn in your Bibles to Matthew 25. And there's a parable here. It's a parable of the 10 virgins. And in this parable, Jesus says in Matthew 25:1, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto." The kingdom of heaven. And this morning I'd like to think of the kingdom of heaven as saints, Christians. It's the life that we are living. We are in the kingdom of heaven here on earth. "The kingdom of heaven shall be likened unto." And this is the history or the story that we're writing. But it's also the future that has not been yet. That the kingdom of heaven is part of the story is us now, but part of the story has not been yet. Let's read Matthew 25 down through verse 13 here. It says, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, 'Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him.' Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, 'Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out.' But the wise answered, saying, 'Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves.' And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Verily, or truly, I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore,'" says Jesus, "'watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh.'" The thing that stood out to me this morning when I was reading this, reading over it again, was wise and foolish. Wise and foolish. And like I said earlier, this is a story of us, or it can be, as if we apply it, it's a story of us. Are we wise this morning, or are we foolish this morning? So in this story, we have the goal. The goal is a wedding between the bridegroom and his bride. And I'm not sure in their culture, I don't think the bride was getting married to all 10 virgins here, but in the church is the bride of Christ. And the church is one entity, but it's made up of individual parts, individual people, individuals in the church. Are we wise this morning, or are we foolish? But the goal was the wedding. It was announced in advance, and I'd like to just tell the story somewhat from the perspective of a foolish virgin. So this wedding was announced, and we know when this wedding is happening. This wedding is coming in 2 weeks. And the invitation that I got was to be there at a certain time, to be ready for the bridegroom, and be at a certain place and wait for the bridegroom. So I have the invitation, and I keep it on me at all times. What preparations do I need to make for this wedding? Well, I'm going to buy a new set of clothes. One of the things I need to do, I need to come to the wedding, I need to bring my own light. So I'm going to buy a new set of clothes, and I'm going to buy a new lamp. But the new lamp that I'm going to get, it has an 8-hour supply of oil. And surely that's enough. An 8-hour supply of oil. That's the manufacturer says that it's guaranteed to burn for 8 hours. There's at least 4 others in this group that are doing the same thing. They're buying new lamps too. And these new lamps are great because I don't have to carry my big jug with me. I just carry the lamp and it lasts for 8 hours. The others, there's 10 of us all, and the others, they're going to just take the old regular lamps. They're not going to spend any money on the new ones. They're just going to take the regular ones, and those just have a little reservoir, and they need to be filled very often. So they have to carry their big jug with them, but we're smarter than that, and we're going to do it this way. So it's less cumbersome. Well, as we go, we meet there in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, and we're waiting. We're supposed to wait a couple hours here. And we're in this dark room, and we have our lamps going, and we're having a good time. We're just waiting here. But we wait, and we wait, and we wait, and we wait, and we wait. And we wonder, where is this bridegroom? When is he coming? And we're talking, and then it gets late, and we fall asleep, and finally, at about midnight, this call comes in. The bridegroom is here. The bridegroom is here. Oh, good, good. So we get up, and about that time, the light flickers down and goes out. Oh, no, it's 8 hours since we waited here. The light's out. But the others have been refilling their lamps here and there, and they still have oil. But they don't know how long the wedding's going to last. And I get frantic, and I say, hey, can I borrow some of your oil? I'll pay you back next week. Oh, no, we don't know how long the wedding's going to last, and our jug is partly gone already. And it goes around, and so half of us are desperate. We run down to the market, down to the store, and get a jug, a big jug this time. We come running back. When we get back, then the room where we were waiting is all empty. We run over there down the path and knock on the door, and it's probably about an hour till we get back, but we knock on the door and it opens up and the bridegroom's there. He says, yeah. And we say, hey, we're back now. We got the oil and we're back. And he says, what? He said, we got all the people here. We don't need any more. They're all here. No, we have the invitation. So he pulled out the invitation, and he says, no, we have everybody here. We're not taking any more people. What? Yeah, no, when I came through, we just took the ones that were there, and that's who's going to be here. You just have to go away. And it's all because I didn't have enough oil. I miscalculated. I was feeling like I had it together, and I did not plan ahead. So when my lamp went out. This could be the story of our life. We have an invitation for a wedding. It's clear. There's a wedding, and we have an invitation. Right now, we are in the waiting period. We have the goal, which is a wedding. But we're in the waiting and preparation period right now. Are we wise this morning? Are we able? Do we have the oil, which I'm going to liken to the Spirit of God that renews us, that we're able to be renewed? Are we running on oil from the manufacturer, from conversion? For example, we were saved back here 30 years ago. Or are we refilled? Do we allow the Spirit to refill us? Do we love to dig into the Word and study and have our spirit renewed and washed and filled and cleansed? Do we keep our relationship with Christ, with the bridegroom, up to date as we go through life? Or do we just get busy and just run on autopilot and just let our oil dwindle down and dwindle down and dwindle down? Are we actively waiting for the bridegroom to come? Or are we doing other things? Are we out running the market or doing other things? Are we actively waiting for the bridegroom? Now, the wise are those who have a heart to know God and understand Him. And Proverbs is full of the wise man contrasted with the foolish. In Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. Do we have wisdom and understanding this morning? The fear of God, a desire to know Him, understanding is the knowledge of Him. The wise and the foolish. And you can branch this out, but in a church, we have multiple individuals here. And there's marks of the wise, and I took these out of Proverbs here. But the marks of a wise man or a wise person is somebody that plans ahead. We have the verse that says, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise." And they prepare ahead, they plan ahead, they get ready for something that's to come. And do we plan ahead? Are we a wise person? A mark of a wise person is somebody that thinks before they talk. And this doesn't always just translate right into the ten virgins, but I'm using it as something to get our minds thinking. A mark of a wise person, they think before speaking. Another one, a wise man keeps his heart pure. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And there's other verses that go along with that. A wise man renews his mind, the spirit, daily renewal. A mark of a wise person accepts counsel from others, even if he doesn't agree with it. He's not perfect. A wise man's not perfect. But when he falls or fails, he gets up and tries again. We all stumble at times. We all stumble and fall. But a wise man gets up and tries again. Just because we feel so bad that we stumbled doesn't give us an excuse to lay there. You know, there was sometimes when children play and they're running along and they'll stumble and they'll fall down on the parking lot or gravel or something, and it hurts so bad. Oh, it hurts so bad. And they just lay there and cry like the end of the world is coming. And well, what good does it do to lay there and cry? Maybe it's just part of parents needing to teach the children it's okay to cry about it, but laying there and expecting pity to come isn't going to make it feel better. But that's how we act sometimes when we stumble or we fall, and we just lay there. It's just not worth getting up again. We just can't get up. We've failed so often, and we just can't get up. But a wise man gets up. Though a just man falleth seven times and riseth again, but the wicked shall fall into mischief. The sixth point on the mark of a wise man, he's willing to learn from the experience of others. And that is, we can also say it's learning from history or learning from those that have gone before us, like a son learning from his father or a young person learning from somebody that's older, that's been around the block a few times and knows what happens in life. But a wise person doesn't have to experience everything themselves. They can learn from others. That's a wise person. Wise person is humble. He's willing to be told, just willing to learn from anybody. He doesn't feel like he has to be up here and he can't learn from this person because they're not smart enough or whatever. He's willing to learn from anybody what he can. A wise person is also self-disciplined. And that includes controlling your tongue. James talks about that, controlling our tongues. A wise man controls his temper. And a wise man controls his passions. He controls himself. He keeps himself under subjection. He's self-disciplined. A wise man is self-disciplined. Self-discipline can start any time of life. But self-discipline can start with something as simple as getting up when the alarm clock rings. Self-discipline can also mean don't take seconds, even though the food is so good. And self-discipline goes into other areas. Those are just some small things. Or keeping up an exercise program, or a diet, or something like that. Something that our body naturally would not do, but we make it do that, is self-discipline. And that builds self-discipline. And self-discipline is so useful in all of life. A person with no self-discipline is a disaster. Or that looks like a disaster. And number 9, which is the last mark of a wise man that I have here, a wise man has a servant's heart. A servant's heart. When I think of a servant's heart, there's a verse in John 13, and we read this whenever we have feet washing or communion. But the verse says, and Jesus knowing, something about Jesus knowing that his time was come and all things were was subject to him and he went to God or something like that. Jesus, knowing that he had accomplished everything and he knew that he had the power, God, the divine power. It says he took a towel and girded himself and washed his disciples' feet. Then he gives us an example of servant, of the heart of a servant there. A wise man has the heart of a servant. It's along with being humble, but he seeks the good of his brother or his sister. A wise man does that. So this morning, are we wise? Do we cultivate the attitudes and the heart of a wise person? Contrasting that with marks of the foolish, marks of a foolish man, they slanders others. Proverbs 10:18 talks about that. Slanders others, or a false friend. It says something about lying lips hiding mischief, or something like that. Lying lips. I didn't write that verse down, but Proverbs 10:18. It slanders others and is a false friend. Tells you one thing and then tells you they're your friend, but they're not your friend. Another mark of a foolish person, their speech is sub-quality. It's not excellent speech. And that could be bad language. Could also be just, in general, not helping to build other people. Just tearing people down. Or not being a positive influence on those around us. foolish person loves trouble. They just are attracted to trouble, and they get into trouble. They love it, or it seems like it. That's Proverbs 10:23. They don't ask advice or learn from others' experience. And that's 12:15 or 15:5. If you want to look them up later, you can in Proverbs. They just kind of go through life and fly by the seat of their pants, you might say. Just wing it. Another one, the mark of a foolish person, they explode in anger over things they don't agree with. It's Proverbs 12:16. And you know, as I look at my life, I see these marks, most if not all of them. At one time or another in my life, I have been a foolish person. Exploding in anger over things I don't agree with is one that is easy to do. Instead of hearing out both sides of the equation or holding your tongue until some time goes by, it's easy to make a snap decision, a snap judgment, and really lay this thing straight. Whatever it is. And that's one mark of a foolish person. Another one is 13:16 of Proverbs. Foolish man runs his mouth before engaging his brain. We all know people like that. And I know one person like that sometimes. It's another mark. 14:16. Foolish person, there's no fear of danger, no fear of judgment. We're not scared of living in sin, for example. We're not scared of living in sin because nothing will happen. We're going to do it. We're going to live it up. No fear of danger. No fear of judgment. And this is my own words here, some of it. In 17:10 of Proverbs, it's a mark of a foolish person is thick-headed or stupid. They don't receive correction or learn from mistakes. Other verses that would support that, it says a bridle for the horse and a... No, it says a bridle for the horse and a... forget. But then it also says a rod for the fool's back. So it's the only way they can learn is if you beat them over the head with something or beat them on the back or something. That's the thought. They're not able to get something in their head. They just don't get it. It has to be basically forced into them or onto them, it seems like. That's the thought. But a wise person is able to learn from mistakes or receive instruction, and a fool doesn't. And the last one here, a foolish person does not pay attention to the lessons that can be learned right in front of him. That's in 17:24. The foolish person doesn't pay attention to the lessons that are right in front of him that can be learned. A wise person does. A wise person pays attention to what can be learned right in front of him. But a foolish person has his mind out, it says, to the ends of the earth. It's always out there, out there, out there. Something out there. And is not open to learning what's right in front of him. Wise and foolish. And this morning I was giving those out. I'm not trying to make judges of us to say, well, he is wise, she is wise, she's foolish, he's foolish. But look at ourselves. Can we cultivate the marks, the characteristics of wise people this morning? Do we think ahead? Do we plan ahead in this kingdom of heaven that we are part of, this life that we're living? Do we look ahead and apply the characteristics of a wise man to our hearts? If you would turn to Matthew 7, and there's some verses here. It's at the tail end, it's 7, and we'll start reading in verse 24. There's a children's song about this that we sing. But Jesus gave this parable, or this story, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and he had covered a wide range of topics here. You could almost say that he covered most of life's lessons in that Sermon on the Mount. And that story is about the wise man and the foolish man. You children know that song, or at least ours know that song. And we say the wise man built his house on the rock, the foolish man built his house on the sand. But Jesus gave this here, it says, after he had given all these lessons, he says, therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, whosoever heareth and doeth, that's the faith and the works. Who heareth and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. It had a good foundation. And that's because of the faith and the action. Everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not. That's the faith. It looks good. There's faith, but there's no action. It's like a house on the sand. One's a wise man, and one's a foolish man. Which one are we? So this year, as we ponder the path of our feet, the direction that we go, as we step back and look at that and analyze what direction we're going, what do we see? This new year is a brand new opportunity to live for God. It's brand new. It's never been lived before. And it is, as we live it, we're setting a course, or setting tracks in this year. History. We're making history. If we need to make a course correction, when is the best time to do it? Now. Let's do it now. A renewal of our spirit and a closer walk with God is a very good New Year's resolution. And I would like to challenge all of us to a New Year's resolution for renewing of our minds, renewing of our spirits, and a closer walk with God. Let's stand for prayer.